from the Sculpture Garden of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show. Coming up this week, road bikes are facing an existential crisis. Literally, the very future of them is under threat, and from somewhere that you wouldn't expect. But we're discussing whether it could actually be a good thing rather than a bad thing.
We've also got some hot new tech from the rebirth of an old brand. Which age groups ride the most? And also, what on earth are you going to do with 27 million fridges?
It's a great question. For those of you that stick through to the end, we also have a pair of nuggets for you as well. Good ones this week, Connor. This week in the world of cycling, we learned that the world's best sprinter, Lorena Vives, can be beaten. Her clean sheet of sprint wins came to an end last week when she was toppled by young Welsh cyclist Caris Lloyd in her first ever victory.
That is a scalp to take, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fortunately, though, in spite of a close call victory celebration mishap, Vives did win in Flanders Fields on Sunday, and in fine style too, winning from a breakaway and not her preferred bunch sprint territory.
Yeah. Away from racing, ultra endurance nutcase Alex McCormack is currently trying to see how far he can ride on his own in a week.
Yeah, he's on a super fast Canyon Speedmax TT bike, but the weather is conspiring against him and it looks pretty grim.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, even he is moaning on social media about how grim it is. But at the halfway point, in spite of this grimness, he'd already ridden 1,800 kilometres.
That's a long way.
Yeah.
Right. He's doing up and down the Moselle River, which cuts through France, Luxembourg and onto Germany, where, interestingly, the steep-sided valleys are the home of Riesling wine.
Good fact, Connor. Yeah. And we should say, the tarmac in the Moselle Valley is good, which leads us neatly onto this week's main talking point, tarmac, or pavement, for our US audience.
Now wait, stick with us, this is interesting, we're honest, because a new story has caught our attention, has raised some alarm bells about the future of road bikes, and it relates to roads themselves.
Yeah, okay, so here in the UK, for context, those of you who don't live here, the country is split up into counties, right? And each one is given a budget from which they need to pay for education, social care, like environment and waste, and then also highways, so roads, basically.
Yeah, as is the case everywhere at the moment, budgets are tight owing to rising costs of, well, everything.
Yep.
But one council has hit the news because they are suggesting that they can no longer afford to maintain their road network. And so some roads will be returned back to gravel.
Yeah. Now, not main roads, of course, but we're talking quiet country roads that have limited car traffic, i.e. the very roads that are idyllic to cycle on.
Now, many of you might be thinking at this point, great, I love gravel, and we do too, but when it's a choice and not the only option.
Yeah, and whilst it might seem that we're creating a little bit of fuss over nothing, the loss of roads to ride is actually a real risk, okay?
Yeah, so again, here in the UK, we have 247,000 miles of roads. Only 2,331 miles are motorways or highways, which is a surprisingly small number, actually. And a further 27,000 miles are major roads. And then 215,000 are minor roads. That's a lot of roads.
That is a lot of roads, isn't it? Yeah. Now, the cost of resurfacing and looking after 215,000 miles of road would, conservatively, this is like back of fag packet maths here, be about £60 billion, potentially up to as much as £120 billion. Now, to put it in perspective, the UK government currently allocates £1.6 billion per year in order to upkeep those roads, although they have announced a £7 billion emergency fund because most of those roads are in such terrible condition.
Yeah, still, it's a drop in the ocean, and it's for this reason that a number of other European countries are managing the decline of rural roads in one way, shape or form, Italy being the prime example.
Yeah, southern Italy, sounds like that's exactly what's happening. And other countries have got even greater, far greater road networks. So France, would you believe, cycling paradise that it is, 1.1 million kilometres of roads.
Whoa.
So what's that, 600,000 miles? That is a lot, isn't
it? Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Is there a real risk then of losing roads for gravel?
Well, potentially, right? Of course, a lot of you from the USA and Canada probably saying right now, well, yeah, that's what we already have, right? So 35% of all the 4.1 million miles of roads in the USA are already gravel. And in Canada, it's up to 60%, apparently.
That's a lot of gravel. But yep. To the best of our knowledge, those roads have always been gravel. This difference is losing miles of road riding and having to ride gravel instead. And while it's not going to happen next week, and this is probably councils making a bid for more money, it is actually something that might happen.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard it said that until technologies develop, there is literally a finite amount of time where we can sustain infrastructure like the road network. And at that point, if more and more roads do end up deteriorating and being left to gravel, would cyclists be better off?
Well, I mean, cars would be less likely to use the gravel roads unless absolutely necessary. So hopefully they would be even quieter.
True, yeah.
And cars would go slower, so you think they might be safer to ride on?
Yeah, true. But in winter, no amount of mudguardage or fenderage is going to stop you from being covered in filth, I don't think. And you're still going to be faced with potholes, but also braking bumps, washboard, which is like horrendous to ride bikes on, and increased surface water as well.
Yeah, true.
Worse, when they're dry, gravel roads throw up loads of dust, right? The posh word for dust being particulate matter. And we know just how bad that can be, both for the environment and also your own health.
You're saying that gravel riding is bad for you?
No. I mean, let's not go there, right? Everything's bad for you, isn't it, really, if you put it that way? But what is also up for debate is whether or not gravel roads are actually cheaper to maintain at all.
Yeah, I read that the threshold is 200 cars per day. More than that, and you'd need to pave it to stop it falling apart too quickly.
Yeah, and then less than that, you can get away with it because there's not enough cars to do any damage. All right, so this is then a possible outcome for the future. It's kind of already something that will be familiar to a lot of you. We know from the comment section about how bad roads are getting and the kind of bikes that you're riding instead. But if this is a potential outcome for the future, would you want it? Would you want more gravel roads at the expense of paved roads? Would that make it nicer for cycling? Here, France, Spain, Italy, the Americas?
Oh, it's really hard to compare between this country here and the wider roads you get, I think, in less population-dense countries. I think here it might make it more relaxing. Personally, I think like the minor roads in the UK have just got so busy with traffic. It's quite hard. Before, I think when I first started cycling, you could switch off on those roads because you just knew you probably wouldn't see anyone. But now you can't do that. You always have to be ready for the next car coming around the bend. So it might lead to that happening again, like a bit more relaxing to ride a bike.
Yeah, I think for environmental reasons, there's a big, strong case for it. And certainly in some areas where you think, why on earth are we investing money in sustaining this bit of tarmac, which is really bad for the planet, isn't it? And it's not really serving a purpose these days. I think maybe people got a little bit too tarmac happy back in whenever it was, the 50s and 60s. But would I want to only ride gravel and not road? No way. I would seriously miss going out for road rides.
I think, in a way, though, some of those rough back roads we have around here, it was almost like riding on gravel now.
Oh, it is pretty much, yeah. Thing. You can see it coming. It's called managed decline. And I genuinely think some councils at the minute are like, well, does it really matter if that's got potholes? Just drive slower.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like we're there already in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
I miss it. Like, I miss riding my road back on a nice, like, pristine bit of tarmac. So I agree with you there. I definitely would miss it. I think personally I'd take that for a calmer, more relaxed bike ride though.
Really?
Mm.
Okay, right. Well, get involved in the comment section down below. Firstly, I hope you don't think that we're scaremongering. But anyway, let us know in the comment section what you do think. And if it does come to it, would you want more gravel roads at the expense of paved roads? Or are paved roads essential? And do you want to keep riding road bikes on them, basically? Be very interested to get people's take on this
one. Yeah, I'm really interested to hear from people on this.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with a new bike release that we missed a couple of weeks ago. So Felt are enjoying a bit of a renaissance, aren't they, after a few years in the corporate wilderness. And they are back. They are back with new engineer owners and a new aero bike called the Nexar.
Yeah, Felt were early pioneers for aero road bikes, so this should be their bread and butter. And the Nexar looks pretty cool. They say it's one of the fastest aero bikes, and that's from independent testing too. But that at 800 grams for the frame puts it in the lightest of the category.
Yeah, so the top of the range bike, they say, weighs just 6.48 kilos, which is pretty nuts for an aero road bike. Pretty much for any road bike, really, these days, isn't it? But what's also interesting is that they say they've designed the geometry of this bike to benefit 99% of cyclists as opposed to the 1%. So essentially, you don't have to be a pro in order to be able to ride it. It's actually a bike that, you know, like I say, those people that don't want...
accessible aero.
Bum up, head down. Accessible aero. Aero. Yeah.
Accessible aero, I think that, yeah. You heard it here first.
Okay.
From a rebirth to a farewell now, though, Paragon Machine Works are shutting up shop after 43 years.
Yeah, this is sad, isn't it? So they might not be familiar to many of you, but they've supplied the essentials needed for frame building, like bottom bracket shells, head tubes, dropouts. And so basically they have supported many, many custom builders, helped sustain that industry, what, since the 80s?
Yeah, we wish all the staff at PMW all the best for the future. Next up, though, we are going to continue with our weekly segment of City Mayors Riding Bikes. We had the new Parisian mayor last week. This week, it's the New York mayor, Mam Darny, who commuted 7 miles back home from a fundraising event.
Yeah, it took him 47 minutes, according to his tweet. So not a bad little ride, that.
Nice.
Maybe he'll be joining the Central Park Bunch Rides next. We might struggle to sustain cycling mayor of the week for one more week.
Do you reckon?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It feels like good fortune that we've had two on the bounce. But anyway, we will do our best. If you are mayor of a town, city, or even a village, do you get village mayors? No, you don't. Town or city, and you would like to feature on the GCN show riding a bicycle, you know where to send your photos.
Staying with the US now, though, and there's some good news from Portland, where the city have allocated $20 million towards subsidising the purchase of e-bikes. Up to $1,600 for a normal e-bike and up to $2,350 for an e-cargo bike.
This is cool, isn't it? Mm. So the money comes from Portland's Clean Energy Fund, which raises cash from a 1% surcharge added to transactions at major retailers around the city. So, I mean, I think that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, that's really cool. Super cool. And while I'm sure some people in Portland will be getting their knickers in a twist over funds going towards buying bikes, there is actually a really strong case for public funds going towards things that save energy.
Now, I saw something like this, but it was related to fridges. Okay, I couldn't find the original source, so I plugged some numbers in myself. Okay, so if every household in the UK upgraded to an A+ energy efficient fridge, it would save the country 5.5 billion kilowatt hours per year.
Okay? That's a lot.
That is a lot. It works out as about £1.5 billion worth of electricity. Now, it's probably only about £60 to £100 of energy saved per household per year. So it wouldn't pay government expenditure back in 1 year. But, I mean, you imagine they could get a deal on a fridge, the government. So in like 3 or 4 years, that investment would be paying itself back, isn't it?
It's wild, isn't
it? It's equivalent to taking 500,000 cars off the road. Just from fridges.
I mean, imagine all the other things you could do as well.
Well, exactly, yeah.
I guess the only issue is the fallout from 27 million fridges going to landfill.
Yeah, I haven't quite worked out how to recycle 27 million fridges yet. That's true. And you probably wouldn't need 27 million, because I'm sure lots of people already have A+ rated fridges.
Yeah, I think that is right.
Is it?
I think so.
Good man. But do you know what I mean? It's those things where you suddenly, like, if a stake starts getting involved, like insulating houses or whatever... You know, whilst you and I maybe feel like it's a drop in the ocean if we buy a new fridge to save money, but population level. Anyway, these kind of knock-on effects are interesting, aren't they? So, for example, the UK's National Walking Wheeling, don't really know what that is, and cycle charity, formerly known as Sustrans, they published their annual report. And within it, they state that cycling saves the UK Health Service £72 million per year.
That is good for the NHS. Even better for those people riding who are enjoying improved health.
Too. Yeah, and actually just enjoying riding as well, generally. Right, changing gear slightly now. I spotted a very interesting article on bicycling.com. last week, okay? So they had got hold of data from Strava, Zwift, and Ride with GPS to see how far different age groups cycle on average.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. Across both Ride with GPS and Strava, the biggest mile munchers were older riders. On the latter, boomers rode on average 18 miles compared to just 10 miles and 11 miles for Gen Z and millennials, respectively.
Yeah, big difference, isn't it? Ride with GPS saw even more extreme results. So 70 to 80-year-olds rode on average 19 miles. The over 80s rode the most of all, 21 miles on average.
Cool. Yeah. Rolling retirement.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm surprised at those results.
I mean, I can't imagine there are all that many over 80s on Ride with GPS. So we might be talking about a fairly committed pool of people.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah, fair play.
It's good, isn't it?
Interesting, though, on Zwift, the opposite is true. So with younger riders racking up more miles than older ones. 20 to 29-year-olds cranked out 19.6 miles compared to 14.7 miles for the over 80s.
Yeah. Now, why do you think that is?
I think that is the technology kind of divide.
You reckon it takes the over 80s too long to log in and pair up all their tech? They'll be like, well, I've just lost my time slot now.
I apologise to anyone over 80, but no, the younger generation is used to using tech, aren't they? And it's just there, it's more natural. And I still think for over 80s, it's not quite as seamless.
Yeah, I also think as well, you get more bang for your buck on Zwift, don't you, right? So it's like, if you are a little bit time crunched, which you might be if you are between the age of 20-something and 40-something, then you can get more done in an hour on Zwift, hence why you could do 19.6 miles. Whereas if you're over 80, then you probably spend less time on Zwift than you would on the road.
Yeah.
When you might be out with your chums.
Yeah. You can pick and choose your days.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, get the weather. Anyway, I thought that was fascinating. So well done, bicycling.com, for that one. Now, lastly, we will leave you with a bit of good news, I think it's good news. So Luke Fetzer is an American professional cyclist, and he was subjected to an alleged assault and car rage incident at home in California last week. But having filmed the incident and called the police, he's now found that an arrest has been made, which is kind of what you want to see, isn't it?
Definitely a bit of justice. We said last week that road violence is a small but persistent problem. This is at least signs of a happy ending in one case.
It is indeed. Yeah, right. Connor, it's that part of the show where we take the opportunity to remind everyone of some of the really cool stuff that is on sale in the GCN online shop. We showed this little number for you last week. This is the latest design to celebrate some of the most iconic cycling events in the world. So Deronda, pretty cool that one, isn't it?
Got the max gradient of the Koppenberg on there too.
Yeah, nice.
Rocking it.
There you go. Nice little GCN logo on the front. It's a good colour, that, isn't it?
Yeah, getting in the mood for the race as well, which is this Easter Sunday too. So one I can't wait to see.
I'd say that's cool as mustard, Connor, but I said that the other week and someone pulled me up and said, surely mustard is hot. And I was like, well, that's a good point. I don't know why it's cool as mustard. But of course, we also have our prints as well, which are proving super popular in the shop as well. So we've got a variety, and you can get them fully framed up, either A4 size or A3 size as well.
Yeah, nice. Just head over to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com, or if you find the QR code on your screen right now, that'll take you right the way there.
Yeah, right, onwards.
Right then, it is time for Hack/Bodge, where you guys submit your kind of clever hacks or bodges. There's no other way of putting it, really. Things that make your bike work well, things that make your bike work not so well. In a bodged way.
If I'm going to be honest, Connor, I think that was a bodge, that intro. Bodge. But anyway, we'll carry straight on.
I always struggle with describing a hack or bodge. Like, I don't know why. I've been saying it for a while now, but that, yeah. Moving on.
No one knows what the difference between a hack or a bodge really is. Right, Gus sent this one in straight up. This is a chain guide / chain drop hack.
Okay.
He's saying hack. I'm not sure what you think about this one. My wife's e-bike chain was coming off regularly. A regular chain drop stopper, a chain catcher that are mostly designed to attach the downstream, wouldn't work because of the width for the battery. I had an old dead Garmin speed cadence sensor with the adjustable arm. So I attached it to the rear stay and positioned the arm so that the chain wouldn't move to fall off. So far, so good.
I don't know about this. I think this is a bodge, sorry.
I'm inclined to agree. Now, obviously, the elephant in the room here is that Gus says that actually, so far, so good.
That's the, yeah.
that little plastic arm feels a little bit flimsy, and the fact that it's keeping the chain next to the tyre, also a bit of a problem. I would advocate those little chain catchers that are attached to your front derailleur.
Yeah, and my worries is this is zip tied on, so it's just going to slowly push that arm across, and then it's going to slide until eventually it starts falling off again.
True, and everyone knows that zip ties are bodges.
I'm sorry, but I'm agreeing with Si. I think it's a bodge on this one. It's going to do the job, but I'm not sure for how long.
Not a permanent fix.
Yeah.
A temporary fix. Okay, but anyway, thank you very much, Gus, for sending that one in. Let us know what you end up with, or if indeed in 3 years' time it's still working happily, in which case we might change our minds.
We'll eat humble pie.
Yeah, who's next, Karan?
So this has been sent in by Rye FG, a multi-bodge Frankenstein cargo trike.
Whoa.
Lots to unpick here. Spotted this out and about in York. The structural gaffer caught our attention first, then the handlebars that are like bug antennae, then the frame that looks like box steel, and well, everything else. I figured if anyone could identify some of these parts, it'd be the lovely folks at GCM.
Wowzers. Okay, now it took me a little while to work out which direction this trike goes in, but I think I can see now. I mean, what on earth is that?
The bars are wild on it. Look how long the bars are.
Yeah. It looks more like, you know, that breed of dogs with really droopy ears. What, they're basset hounds.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a basset hound. I don't know where the pedals are, so that's weird.
I see a shadow of a pedal, so they're roughly in the right position.
Well,
that looks heavy as anything.
It does. I don't feel like that would be a fast bike. But York is a flat city, Connor.
Well, that's it.
So, you know, maybe this functions.
That's what I think about cargo bikes. If you roll around on them, you live somewhere flat, they're brilliant. But you do need something more streamlined when you're in a hilly area.
Mate, you're a stronger man than I. If I ever run out of battery on my cargo bike, which I do sometimes, like, even when I'm on my own on it, I'm just like, oh, God, this is so heavy. So, yeah, that would be impressive. We're going to say bodge?
I think this is a bodge.
Yeah.
I don't know what world this would be a hack.
No.
Not in this one, though.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
All right. Two bodges to start with. Brutal this week. Yeah. Austin Brewer, let's see if you can fare any better. DIY bike storage. I recently moved, didn't have much space for my biking gear. I was inspired by the StassDock storage system. Figured I could make one myself. I'm a welder, so I put this together. It holds my shoes, sunglasses, helmet, bike, hydro pack, and some tools. Been using it for a couple of months, and I love it.
Damn.
Gonna zoom on in.
That's nice.
That does look pretty neat, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, that's a hack. We can give this a hack, I think. You've got nice storage in there for all your bits and bobs. Helmet goes on top.
Yeah.
Nice and neat. Little hanger for the hydration bladder. And you know what? He's positioned this superbly on the wall because you could have easily messed that bit up. I would have done, and I'd have put it too high, and the saddle would have been through the ceiling. I'd have been absolutely cursing.
Yeah. Okay, no fair. I think that is a hack. If you have welded your own bike storage, that's cool. The bike looks mega as well.
I'm currently trying to figure out how to weld because I've...
This is worrying.
Yeah. Well, I've damaged the kickstand on my cargo bike.
It
started to bend and snap, and there's no replacements I can find anywhere. So the only way to fix it is to learn how to weld and fix it myself. So...
Well, there's a GCN Tech video waiting to happen.
If you want to see that happen, let me know. But I'm diving in. I've started the research.
At the research phase, oh my word. Okay.
All different types of welders. I have absolutely no clue what I'm doing.
If there are any local welders close to GCN Megabase, please help Connor so that he doesn't set fire to his eyebrows.
I reckon I'm just going to dive in, get the big one, and I don't know what to put on it, though. I need to weld something to it to fix it.
I mean, this does sound... Anyway, all right. No, I want to see how this one pans out. Okay, and then I think this is the last one for this week, Connor. Richard.
Yep, sent in by Richard. Patching tubeless tyres. Ooh, this is interesting. Got a puncture in my tubeless tyre. It's 1,000K that wouldn't seal. I tried to plug, didn't work. Bike shopper told me that the tubeless tyre wouldn't seal. Patching wouldn't work either. I needed to replace it. It was pretty pricey for a new Conti GP5000, so I wasn't very happy about that. So I figured I'd have to replace the tyre anyway. There's no harm in trying to patch it, so I did successfully. While doing that, I noticed there was no sealant left in the tyre, which is probably the reason it didn't seal in the first place. Now, 3,000 kilometres later, I got my next puncture. It did seal this time, but it opened again a few rides later, so I patched that one as well. And it gave me the opportunity to check the old patch, which was still holding strong. So it turns out you can patch a tubeless tyre. You just need to remove the sealant gunk, degrease the area, sand it lightly, and then you can patch it like a normal butyl inner tube.
To be fair, mate, I have done this very thing myself on several occasions. And yeah, it totally works.
Well, there you go. I didn't think you'd be able to do that. Yeah. I thought it would.
Yeah, I don't know why people say that you can't. I mean, there's part of me that kind of worries slightly, because you know that, like, the actual puncture repair glue, it kind of, like, melts the rubber, doesn't it, I think, to help bond it. So there's part of me that's like, ooh, you don't really want to be putting that on the tyre. But if, as in this case, it's lasted for 3,000 kilometres,
yeah,
mine's doing pretty well as well.
Yeah.
Given how expensive tyres can be.
That is a hack. I mean, it's worked. You've proven it. There you go. Saves a good bit of money too.
Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant, isn't it? Well, nice. I'm glad we finished on two highs.
Yeah, two highs.
50-50 this week. That's not too bad. Keep your Hack and Bodge submissions coming in. You can obviously send them straight to us using the GCN uploader. The link is in the description beneath this video. Next up, it's time for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second. But as always, we will start with the results from last week where we gave you this photograph of Pogacar and Mark Cavendish having a little heart-to-heart, bit of a mini cuddle at the podium of San Remo.
Edward Lee, the winner of this one.
Oh, congratulations, Edward. What was the caption?
So, hey, at least your haircut is better than size.
Oh, what? You're saying Pogacar's haircut, the Slim Shady haircut?
I think you've copped a bit of unfair abuse for your haircut, side, to be fair. I quite like it. I think it's got like the boy racer vibe.
Yeah, okay, thanks, mate. I appreciate that. I found a really funny... Oh, here we go. A really funny comment, actually. This is from Andrew G. Turnbull, who said, regarding the Milan-San Remo podium presentation, basically Dan and I were saying, Cav doesn't seem like he's particularly well qualified to present at Milan-San Remo, because he's obviously won it once, but only once, and I suggested Eric Zabel. Anyway, Andrew Turnbull said, Eric Zabel could line up to hand out the trophy only for Oscar Freire to duck under his shoulder and beat him to it. Are you old enough to remember that?
Yeah, I like that.
There you go. Ideally, we'll have a photo on screen now so you can see, but yeah, poor old Eric Zabel. Either robbed or just caught napping.
Yeah. Few of those happen at San Remo.
Yeah, big time. Right, anyway, congratulations, Edward. Get in touch and we will get your Camelback water bottle out to you. This week's photo is, like, it's just mad, isn't it?
Yeah, I couldn't actually believe this photo when I first saw it.
Yeah, if you're listening to this as a podcast, this is Wout van Aert riding up, I think, it's from E3, so we're not entirely sure which berg that is, but a fan is literally got his nose on Van Aert's helmet as he's cycling past. Like, that's got to hurt, right? That fan is going to be, sporting a bloody nose, or at least potentially even a broken nose?
Yeah. I'm a little... Hold on. I reckon the photo's mislabeled, but... Because he didn't do E3.
Van Aert?
No. So, no. I reckon it must be Wevelgem. Or it must be from Wevelgem. Either way, I mean... They created it. Was this March? Was yes? I think that's from Wevelgem. Yeah, it's just mislabeled. It was this year. Anyway, it's a mad photo. His nose is really getting boshed in.
It is, yeah.
I bet that hurt.
Yeah.
I've got one.
Go on.
Van Aert got nosed out of in Flanders Field this past Sunday.
That is good, Connor. That is really very good. Yeah.
First one I'm happy with. And myself.
You've steered clear of innuendo as well, which this photo feels like is wide open to. So, yeah, we will laugh if you, you know, go down that route, but we can't promise that you will win if it's too dodgy to read out. But don't let that stop you.
I'm not even going to go.
tell us at the end, Connor.
I've just got it.
There's only 15 people you can offend at the last
bit. I've got three or four already.
Yeah, nice. Your mind works very quickly when it's in the schoolboy mode. Right then, come on then. Let's just go straight in, shall we?
Yeah.
What are the favourite comments, or some of the favourite comments from under our videos this week? As always, loads and loads and loads. We love reading your comments. This one, though, Connor, this one stuck out. Andrew Dyson.
Yeah, anyone who understands the history of the sport of cycling or is pragmatic knows that based on numbers and facts, Tadej Pogačar is not the GOAT. The honour and title still belongs to Eddy Merckx. Tell Dan and Si to do their homework and then apologise to Mr. Merckx for their foolish, ignorant sensationalism, as I am certain they will not. Please inform them that I will no longer watch the GCN show, so consequently their viewership will be reduced to 14 people.
Andrew, I am very sorry to have upset you in this way. Am I sorry that we've called Pogačar the GOAT? No, I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry. And I do you know why? Right, I've been thinking about this a little bit more this week because there was some great healthy debate in the GCN show last week. The reason why Merckx's win rate was so bananas was because of how often people raced back then. So it was a level playing field, right? No one went away to altitude camps and did training. No one was able to pick and choose. So they raced week in, week out. So everyone effectively was playing on a level playing field. If any rider nowadays tried to race more than they do, they'd get absolutely annihilated, wouldn't they? It's just, you cannot compete. If someone's going away and they're training specifically. So, whereas what Pogačar's done now is he has won combinations of races and in a volume that has been unthinkable for pretty much 30-something years, hasn't it? When we were talking about this earlier, weren't we? Like, early 90s, I think, was where you saw the real specialisation of riders, didn't you? Like, Miguel Indurain, Grand Tour, one-trick pony. I think he did one-day race a year, maybe two. And then, you know, obviously it's gone from there, Cobble Classic specialist, Ardennes specialist. Whereas what's remarkable about Pogačar is he's doing it all.
Yeah.
Which we, like, no one thought was possible.
Yeah, I tend to agree, actually. I think at this rate, what he's doing is just simply incredible. And I know what Merckx did was incredible, but personally, I think he's going into that greatest full-time territory now.
Yeah. The unfortunate thing for Merckx is that he almost literally couldn't have done any more. Do you know what I mean? Because he literally won everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of saying that modern racing is better than old racing, but, you know, it is, isn't it?
That's just pretty cat.
Hopefully Andrew's as good as his word and hasn't watched this week's GCN show. Otherwise, we might be getting another email.
Thanks for watching anyway, Andrew.
Thank you, yeah. And we are slightly tongue-in-cheek, obviously. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, next up, Blad Avia. By the way, the term Grand Slam that we were bandying around last week about... getting the all five monuments and then potentially getting all five monuments concurrently and then potentially getting a calendar year Grand Slam of all five monument victories in 1 year, which has never been done before. Blandvia is saying the term originally comes from bridge and other similar card games. It was only later used in sports, with golf being the first one.
Interesting. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know that.
I guess it's gone to tennis next. You can... Right, this was sent in by FB19700101. You can get beer up to 14%, but the brewer has to use wine yeasts.
Yeah, so we were discussing, well, whether...
beer is wine, wine is beer.
Well, no, whether Dan has ever had the strongest beer in the world. Anyway, and then Bloom Cycles stepped in with 13% beer, Dan. Come on, we need a video of Dan trying Brewmeister's Snake Venom, which I Googled. It is the world's strongest beer at 67.5%. Yeah, I'm sure he will see it off no problem. So they use wine yeast for this one, and then they freeze it multiple occasions in order to, like, increase the alcohol content. And then they put more neat alcohol in just to top it up.
I'll stick with my alcohol-free.
Yeah, apparently it's like a syrup. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I almost don't want to see Dan try 67.5% beer.
Maybe that's what he should have drunk on the Christmas hangover challenge.
Then we would have seen a different outcome, wouldn't we?
Yeah, a level playing field.
Yeah.
Next up, Neilco One from Perth. The cold hits harder here. 7 to 9 degrees Celsius is freezing.
There we go. Perth rewriting the laws of physics. I'm not. I can imagine it is cold.
Yeah.
7 to 9 degrees.
When you're used to 40 degrees, it's bound to be freezing.
Absolutely. Can I say, by the way, thank you so much to all of the people from Perth who've been getting in touch to offer group rides and tips and whatever else. It's so cool. Like, we're already well excited to be going out to the Severn Gravel Race in May. And now it's like, yeah, even more so.
Yeah, nice.
Started my training, started growing my mullet. Figured if I'm going to Australia, I'm coming armed with a mullet.
Yeah, you want to protect your neck. It's good for the sun.
Well, and I just figured it would look cool over there, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd add to your boy racer vibe.
Yeah.
I think.
So there we go.
You could braid it if you get it long enough.
Is that an Australian thing?
You can get a little braid on them.
Really?
I think they're pretty cool when you put a braid on
braided
them.
Braided mullets?
Yeah.
I don't know, mate. I might not go there. I don't think it'll be long enough.
Maybe when you come back, that's like... You brought it a little bit back.
I think my wife might change the locks, mate, if I braided my mullet. Yeah. Anyway, right, let's move on. Underneath the time trial challenge video where Alex and I went head to head, there were inevitably quite a few haircut comments under that one as well. And this made me chuckle. A1 White, Si, you were meant to wax your chain, not your sideburns. It was quite fresh, my haircut, by that point, mate.
Squats said, when they called out 58, 54, I thought that was size age group. What size?
Thank you very much. Yeah. And then this one from Booster Boy, 1955. This made me laugh. I waited 61 years to do my one and only time trial. I fell off 100 metres before the finish, broke a collarbone and two ribs. The shame drove me to move to Australia.
Oh, that's a boy.
If you live near Perth, let's catch up. Oh, no, anyway, that did make me chuckle. And then there were loads of great comments underneath the video where you and Ollie were experimenting with weight on flat roads.
Yep. Don Reed, 5074, said, I can watch Connor trying to put on that vest all day. His laugh is so funny. Thank you very much. They set me up with this vest. I was going to do it with the cameras not rolling, but I was, got the giggles.
Ollie was very proud that he was able to lift the weight vest.
I think that's why he made it a real focal point of the day. Maybe not.
I can't. I are you faking?
No.
What are you doing?
You had some support, mate. Belkas Sobaka. I struggled putting on a hoodie. No way, a weighted vest.
Yeah.
So there you go, mate. Yeah, happens to the best of you. Right, and then lastly, this one from Lugnut, I thought was really cool. I finally have science to take to my riding buddy, proving to him that I'm always working harder than him. As someone who weighed approximately 180 kilos, that's nearly 400 pounds, just over 10 years ago, and has used cycling as my exercise program to lose weight because it was the lowest impact exercise on my joints, I know all too well the challenges. I'm down to 125 kilos now with a goal to get down below 115. I still struggle to keep up my riding buddy who weighs around 91 kilos, but word to the wise, don't get in front of me on a downhill.
Nice.
So yeah, that's super cool, isn't it? What an inspiring story as well.
Amazing.
Fair play, Lugnut. Cool. Right, Connor, what's coming up this week on GCN?
Yeah, so this Thursday we've got a piece on kind of like getting back to basics with your training, kind of how to cut through the noise, all the different pieces of advice out there. What is like the real thing you should focus on?
Oh, nice.
And try and like solidify your progress when you're out trying to boost your performance on the bike.
That sounds super cool, that one. Okay. On Saturday, as you just heard, Dan and I heading out to Australia for the 7 gravel race. We are making a couple of vids about our preparation to get there. So this is me and Dan, our two different approaches, strive versus survive. So anyway, check it out, see what you think. It made me laugh quite a lot filming that one with Dan. And then lastly, on Sunday, we got hold of a vintage Paris-Roubaix bike complete with RockShox suspension from 1991. So I've always wanted to ride one of those. How does it shape up compared to a bike that has won the last 3 editions of Paris-Roubaix? The Canyon Aeroad, complete with 32mm tyres.
Looking forward to seeing that.
Oh man, it's super cool. Anyway, yeah, so that should be super good. Right, we will leave you with a couple of little nuggets, as always, for the 17 of you hardcore enough to still be here.
17 now?
Yeah, we think there's 17 now. Oh, actually, no, 15. Andrew. Well, I know there'd be 16, wouldn't there, if Andrew's left.
Yeah.
Andrew's left the chat.
Might again.
Anyway, back to 16.
Anyway, firstly, thanks to Matcha Zantosic. Fun fact for you guys. Pogača is a Slovenian expression for similar kind of bread, like a kind of focaccia. So in literal translation, pogača would be a man who makes pogača, or focaccia, if you like.
Yeah. That is a good nugget. That's that obviously relating to Pogacar saying he wouldn't ever go back to San Remo unless it was to eat focaccia. Mm. So there we go. I did not know that Tadej Pogacar was actually called Tadej Focaccia. Amazing. So yeah, thank you very much for that. Finally, the final nugget. I couldn't quite believe this one, but the United Nations has just released a guide for how to design cycle route networks.
Very random, but cool.
Yeah, so the guide, they say, is directed at transport professionals responsible for developing cycling at municipal, regional or national levels.
Okay.
Yep, cycle route networks should be an important component of a mobility strategy of a country, region or municipality. They need, therefore, to be, if not done so yet, an integral part of the infrastructure and mobility plans.
You went the whole way with the voice, didn't you?
Did, yeah.
So what's the first step?
Well, since you ask, Connor, step one is to declare the ambition and set up a team for designating the cycle route network at the specific level, and then commence informal consultations with stakeholders. And then, 8 steps later, they say you can sit back and monitor your brand new network.
Oh, nice.
So there you go. How to turn your country into a cycling country in 8 simple steps, courtesy of the United Nations.
Thanks, United Nations.
Yeah. On that note,
thanks for watching, everyone.
Thank you very much for watching. Fair play if you have got to the end and sat through not one but 2 nuggets.
Strong nuggets, though.
Strong nuggets, yeah. Enjoy the Tour of Flanders this weekend, and we will see you back here next week.
Thanks, everyone.